WMKV 89.3 FM, with permission of WMUB-FM, Miami University Broadcasting, is proud to present the following hour-long historic documentary on one of the greatest legends of jazz, Bix Beiderbecke.
Just ask Satchmo about Bix. He'll say, "Tell the whole world there'll never be another Bix Beiderbecke." He was a born genius, but they crowded him too much with love. This is Bix, a biographical series made possible through a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and produced by Miami University Radio. In 1926 found Bix Beiderbecke playing cornet with the Gene Goldcat Orchestra. He went with the band on a very successful tour of the eastern United States. Paul Mertz, who rejoined Goldcat in the fall, has high praise for Bix's style and musicianship. Here, Mertz recalls the Goldcat band.
Around November 1926, I returned to the Greystone band. It's a riskin' having been shifted to some other Goldcat unit. So there I was, again playing with Bix and this exciting band, and another chance to be exposed directly to Bix's influence. I gained even more insight into his musical thinking, especially when we roomed together during the band's Eastern tour in early 1927. This tour was the crowning experience of my Goldcat career. There were three enormous thrills that I got. First, playing to the cheering crowds at Roseland Ballroom, New York City. Secondly, making a slew of Victor records with the band, 10 of them in all. And thirdly, being pianist with Frank Trombar's OK Records combination on its first recording session. That's when we made the classic Singing the Blues and Clarinet Marmalade and Trumbology. Maybe I shouldn't intrude a personal peeve here, but Itzy Riskin is generally credited as pianist on these recordings made during this tour. But don't believe it. I did them. This tour was one of the most exhilarating episodes of my life. And I guess it's an apropos time to leave off in my memory roaming about Bix. There's a good bit more I could talk about. Well, maybe some other time.
Saxophone player Frankie Trombauer organized a group of musicians for recording on his own. Frankie Trombauer's orchestra was made up of men from the main Goldcat troupe. They recorded a series of tunes in New York. Six of the sides they cut represent Bix at his peak. Frank Powers discusses this series of recordings and the impact they had on the jazz world.
Starting on February 4, 1927, Frank Trombauer was to record with a group of musicians out of the Goldcat band a series of very memorable sides for the OK Recording Company. On February 4th, he recorded the tunes Trumbology, Clarinet Marmalade, and the immortal Singing the Blues. Again, on May 9th, they recorded Ostrich Walk and Riverboat Shuffle. Then again on May 13th, I'm Coming Virginia, and Way Down Yonder in New Orleans. Trombology is a saxophone novelty number and can be discarded from the lot on the basis of musical importance. However, the six remaining sides comprise some of the finest literature of recorded jazz in the 1920s. Not only that, but they are the prime achievement of Bix Beiderbecke's career as a jazz musician. Their perfection and beauty is absolutely unchallengeable, in my opinion. and they are also indicative of the fact that though Bix was a great genius, he did dwell among mortals. But this must not be said to suggest that the musicians that Bix played with on these recording dates were that much beneath him. They were certainly as near peers as it would have been possible to achieve at that time without breaking the color line. Clarinet Marmalade, of course, is the first number of this recording date and is out of the repertory of the original Dixieland Jazz Band, which, of course, is a very early influence on all these musicians. They considered themselves, doubtlessly, to be part of the continuing tradition of the original Dixieland Jazz Band. Again, this is an arrangement by Bill Challis, and it is interesting to speculate that the ensemble passage that precedes Frank Trumbauer's saxophone course might again be the product of Bix's imagination with the fine points of technique added by Challis. Bix's course, of course, is a magnificent thing for its precision and its timing and its feeling. It's also notable that Challis had the taste and understanding of the direction that jazz was going, that he avoided the parade band sound that most contemporary bands would get playing a number such as Clarinet Marmalade. And through the turnarounds and the fanfares and everything, the momentum of the rhythm section continues to dominate.
Clarinet Marmalade, cut on February 4th, 1927, features Jimmy Dorsey on clarinet and Bix Beiderbecke on cornet. Thank you. Perhaps the tune most closely associated with Bix and his distinctive style is Singin' the Blues. The choruses on this recording seem to distill the essence of the Beiderbecke restraint and at the same time illustrate his command of the jazz idiom. Frank Powers reviews the history of the tune and the importance of Beiderbecke's interpretation.
Singin' the Blues is the most famous record that Bix ever made. His influences on other musicians were marked to the extent that, say, even the great tenor saxophone player Lester Young, who is not associated generally in the minds of most jazz aficionados with Beiderbecke, was primarily inspired by the school of playing that Bix and Tram represented. Lester pleaded guilty to having carried a copy of Singin' the Blues around in his sax case for many years. Well, it seems that if one must discuss Singin' the Blues, the origin of this number, well, that goes back to the original Dixieland Jazz Band. They made this a part of a medley on the recording of Margie. The tune was written by J. Russell Robinson, who in 1920 was the pianist with the original Dixieland Jazz Band. And into the middle of Margie, they insert the new tune, Singin' the Blues, which never really went very far at that time. It was to be 7 years, and in the hands of the great jazz musician, that this tune was to take its place among the historic numbers of jazz music. The most notable thing, though, about Singin' the Blues is that this is the first attempt by a jazz musician to play a ballad at slow tempo, to experiment with the chords of it, and to conceive a melodic paraphrase in the framework of something other than a stomp or a blues tune. Any jazz musician will tell you that this is, that to play a ballad is the most difficult thing. And though Singin' the Blues may not be a ballad in the sense of Body and Soul and Stardust, the chord sequences follow more closely to that category than any other type of song which you could mention.
Bill Rank, Paul Mertz, Chauncey Morehouse, and Eddie Lang joined Bix and Tram to record Singin' the Blues. Thank you. The next recording session for Trombauer was May 9, 1927. The orchestra consisted of Bix Beiderbecke on cornet, Bill Rank on trombone, Tram, Red Ingle, and Don Murray on reeds, Izzy Riskin on piano, Eddie Lang on guitar, and Chauncey Morehouse on drums. The group cut Ostrich Walk and Riverboat Shuffle in New York for OK Records. Bill Challis, an arranger for Goldcat, worked out the orchestration for Ostrich Walk. When asked, "Did you and Bix work together to arrange Ostrich Walk?" Mr. Challis answered,
"Well, to a certain extent, and it got a little more serious later on. But at the beginning, they needed something basic to work with. So I was more occupied with even taking some prints and working them over to get the some tunes in there. Bix, he wanted to put some ideas down, and besides, I wanted to get some of them down. They made my arrangement sound good. Actually, we thought we'd get together. He thought the band needed some more of those, some Dixieland. That is, original Dixieland tunes, like Ostrich Walk. So we decided to get that down. That was the first one we did. We went over to Goldcat had a school over there, and that was one place where they had a nice piano. We could stay there all night. So I remember spending some time on that one. We got that done pretty much in one night. And it turned out well, the rehearsal. He liked it. He liked the results. The guys liked the results. I liked the results. It was fine. I didn't even know the tune Ostrich Walk. So he would have had to have a lot to do with it. So he sat down and he played it over first on the piano. Oh, he was the best as far as I was concerned. Just, he played everything, and it would be what struck me is that the way he played it would be the way you'd want to voice it for instruments. My job was to tell him, play it over again till I get it. On Ostrich Walk, yeah, he had the whole introduction came right out under his fingers as he played it. I said, "Well, you want anything different than that? That's good." Usually I had the last say. If I wanted him to change something, okay, how about this? And then if I don't ever remember us fighting about anything or, you know, getting strong, I don't like that, never. And I like practically everything he did.
Frank Powers summarizes the history of Ostrich Walk and evaluates the results of the teamwork between Bix and Bill Challis.
On May 9th, Trumbauer again obtained a recording date from OK Records, in which there were only minor changes in personnel. Don Murray had returned to the fold and was present on clarinet and baritone sax, replacing Jimmy Dorsey. Red Ingle was on alto saxophone. The first tune they recorded was a number, again, like Clarinet Marmalade, Ostrich Walk, is a composition of the original Dixieland Jazz Band from their famous series of 1918 recording dates. They're paying homage to that tradition again. Also quite similar in this respect is that Bill Challis is the arranger of this number. And again, he lifts it from the mundane Dixieland march style into a vehicle for jazz performance. Indeed, possibly you might even say a virtuoso vehicle for all the musicians involved. However, when Bix comes to take his solo, it's a notably sensitive solo, full of pathos and understatement, culminating with a beautiful half-valve effect break at the end. Thank you.
The second side, cut by Tram's Orchestra on May 9, 1927, was familiar to Bix. He had already recorded Riverboat Shuffle with the Wolverines. Bix was now playing with more experienced musicians. Frank Powers considers the effect of this experience on the record.
Riverboat Shuffle is the composition of Hoagy Carmichael. This is Bix's second recording this number, the first being made with the Wolverines a couple of years before. This particular arrangement was written by Izzy Riskin, the piano player on the session. The harmonic aspects of this particular group of musicians and Bix's the concepts of harmony are more than evident on this record. The use of some of the sustained chords, particularly the one right after Bix's chorus, are an extension of the basic Carmichael harmonic framework of the tune. In the breaks, originally, of course, they wanted to call the tune freewheeling because it had four breaks, a pun on the mechanical aspect of automobiles at that time. It's interesting also to note how Bix unleashes a high note near the end and plays in a style that's often overlooked, the fact that Bix Beiderbecke was a hot player, that is, an impassioned player, and the way he carries the band out in the final ensemble right after the breaks is indicative of this.
The composer of Riverboat Shuffle, Hoagy Carmichael, offers some praise of Beiderbecke's work with his tune.
I think in the case of Riverboat Shuffle that he made with Frankie Trombar, he rewrote the tune for me, and he added some wonderful phrases, which I later incorporated into the piano copy. That's how good they were. Beautiful job.
Thank you. a biographical series made possible through a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Consultants for the series were John Steiner, along with Joseph Campbell and Philip Evans. Commentary was recorded by Frank Powers. Continuity was written by Mary Kay Fulton. Audio engineer, Michael J. McGuire. Bix was researched, produced, and directed by Jim Grover. This is Bill Utter speaking for Miami University Radio.
WMKV 89.3 FM, your home 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for all your favorite music from the 1920s through the 1940s, is proud to present another half-hour program from the historic documentary on one of the greatest legends of jazz, Bix Beiderbecke.